Welcome, everybody. This is Power and Pride, and I'm your host, Jay Quinton. I'm very excited about this episode that we have today. We have the president of the Young Democrats of America who will be calling in. And regardless of your Democrat, Republican, Independent, what have you, it doesn't matter. I think this is a great conversation that we can all enjoy. And if you are in a different house, if you're in a red state, a blue state, or you check a different box, I would love to hear from you as well and hear your ideas and thoughts from your perspective. So stay tuned so you can hear my conversation with the president of the Young Democrats of America in an episode we're calling Be the Change. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Power and Pride. I'm your host, Jay Quinton. I have with me a very special guest, Joshua Harris Till, the president of the Young Democrats of America, the newly elected president, if I'm right, right? It's July of 2019. How you doing, Josh?
Man, I can't complain at all. I'm really glad to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. It's really a pleasure to have you. You've been busy lately. I know you were in D.C. recently. You're in Illinois, getting kind of sworn in. How's that been for you so far?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think I've spent like a week at home since I've gotten elected. A number of different trips that I've been on, a number of trips planned, but it's great. You know, it's all a part of the process, and I like being in an exciting environment, and we're hoping to do some really amazing things in the process.
Perfect. So before we kind of get a little bit of your background, for those that don't know, what is the Young Democrats of America?
So Young Democrats of America is a youth division of the Democratic Party. We're focused on the ages from 13 to 35. And it's all about training young people, providing them resources, and convincing them to run for office. We can't talk about us being the future. We have to start talking about us being the present. And a lot of that means getting involved right now in the political process.
All right. Fantastic. So so I'm a little outside that age bracket. But no,
we just call that Young Democrat alumni. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. So what kind of got you into politics? Because you've ran for Congress. You've been on some initiatives.
You know, it's a funny story, actually. The student body president, I went to Tulsa Community College for a semester before I transferred to NSU. The student body president caught me in the cafeteria one day. I was just bored, hanging out, struck up a conversation, realized that we had just a ton in common. And towards the end of the conversation, he was like, you know, I'm the student body president. Have you ever thought about student government? And I kind of laughed at him because I played football, you know. That was in my area in high school. So I had never thought about student government or government relations or anything like that. He brought me in. He made me the public relations chair that day. That week, I ended up becoming the president of two further associations just because they didn't have anybody to fill the roles. And as weird as it was and as kind of unorthodox as a process as it was, it really started me on my way towards getting more involved in politics. When I transferred to NSU, I got involved in student government, became press pro temp of the Senate, got involved with political organizations. One is called Oklahoma Intercollegiate Legislature, where we do mock legislative politics. Got involved in that, made a bunch of really, really great friends, started interning for a congressional member, Dan Bourne. And when he left his seat and we elected a person that I disagreed with, I said, it's time to stop talking and start doing. And so I ran against him. I ran against him at 24, which is a horrible idea. I don't advise anybody do that. But it taught me a lot. It helped me get a lot of perspective on campaigns as well as on people. And so I've just been trucking ever since then. And a few short years later, I am the president of the largest partisan youth organization in the world.
Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. I mean, you ran in 2014 and then in 2016, right?
Yes. In 2014, I lost in the primary. 2016, I became the Democratic nominee.
And then you lost to the incumbent Republican, right? But you had a fair share of votes.
Yeah, I did pretty well. Around that time, my mom got sick, and she lives in Texas. And so traveling back from Texas to Oklahoma to kind of check on her really just took away from my ability to effectively campaign. For anybody wondering, campaigning is a full-time job. You can try to do it part-time, but it doesn't work like that, especially when you're going for a congressional seat. In a district like mine, it was one-third of the state of Oklahoma. So we're talking about thousands and thousands of miles, hours and hours behind the wheel, you know, and if you don't have the time to dedicate, you know, full time to that, then you're not going to be able to win it. I found out recently that the person who ran this past time was a mayor, and he was actually my former mayor in Tahlequah. And, you know, he had the resume that people talk about. He got 3,000 more votes in the general than I got. So I did a bunch of great work in the time that I was there. Could have probably done a lot more if I had the time. But, you know, life happens. And right. Life happens whether you're campaigning or working at a regular job, all the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you mentioned there that your mother got sick in Texas. And I was in touch with you a little bit here and there back then. So I know that you were traveling and driving back and forth into all over the place. But your mom had a pretty significant impact on you. Is that right? Is that fair to say?
Oh, 100%. I tell people all the time I'm a huge mama's boy. But I say that in a joking manner, but also seriously, she set the foundation for us. She told us that if you wanted to do something and you worked hard at it, you would be able to achieve it. And so I've been striving. I tell people this all the time, and they give me a little flack about it. But I'm like, I'm just trying to make my mom proud. Yeah. And they're like, but you've done all of this. And I was like, yeah, I hear what you're saying. But if you would have ever met her, you know that she would have been like, okay, you did this, but what's next?
And you know, something else that I saw, and you can tell me if this is right. So supposedly at NSU, there's a fountain, right?
Yeah.
And on the fountain, there's an inscription. Is that something, do you know the inscription I'm talking about?
Be the change.
Yes, sir. So that's something I saw that you, I don't know if you were quoted or interviewed or something, but I saw that you talked about how that kind of inspired your next few steps in politics. Be the change. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, you know, the long version is be the change you want to see in the world, right? And I think that oftentimes we see so many different things that we have problems with. We see so many things that we know need to be fixed. And people look at these as barriers or roadblocks or unfortunate events. But I think we should actually look at these as opportunities. We should look at these as opportunities to actually jump out in front of them and say, hey, this isn't right. I'm going to do something about it. And so when I ran for Congress, I said, this isn't right. He's not getting an opponent. I'm going to do something about it. When I got involved with Young Democrats, I said, this isn't right. I'm involved. I want to do something about it. Every step that I take is always about being very intentional. It doesn't mean that you always have to jump in front. You know, it doesn't mean that you always have to chase the title. It's not even about having a title. It's about making sure that wherever you are and whatever you're doing, you are always being intentional about creating a better situation than you walked into. And so I try to do that everywhere I go, and it's been a life motto for me.
Yeah, and we've seen that come to fruition in at least a couple of instances that I know of. But before we jump into that, so just you ran on a kind of a platform of jobs, you know, reinvesting the people, education, calling for an independent, you know, research group to determine, you know, funding levels, basically looking for zero vet homelessness and calling for people to, or governors and reps, I should say, to join, you know, the mayor's challenge to end vet homelessness, which was, I believe, a Michelle Obama initiative. And then investing in clean energy and infrastructure. So now that you are kind of in a higher seat, if you will, what are the top priorities for you now or for the YDA?
So, you know, a lot of it is the same. I ran on a very people-centric campaign. I wanted to make sure that our focus was never on helping businesses or helping, you know, the rich or, you know, the very well-off or the well-to-do or the political elite. You know, it's about helping regular people. If the rich people are helped in the process, great. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, when you think about billionaires, right, and the fact they have more money that they could spend in their lifetime, and that hoarding of wealth hurts a regular person's ability to be able to buy bread, or they have to live off ramen noodles, or they don't know how they're going to make rent. You know, this isn't necessarily about, you know, picking yourself up by your bootstraps anymore, right? This is about what you have the opportunities to do. So I'm still focused on people. I'm focused very heavily on young people getting involved in politics, because I think that for too long we have seen people who aren't going to live long enough for the policies to affect them making the decisions, right? It's easy to say we should cut funding to Medicare when you're 80 years old and you're not going to be on Medicare much longer, right? It's hard to say let's cut funding to Medicare when you're 20 years old and you're not even close to the age of being able to receive it. And so I want young people to be involved. When we talk about education, it's easy to say, you know, kids just have to work harder to be able to afford college. When you've already got your degree, when you already went to college, when you went to college, the price of college was so cheap and affordable that you could work a part-time job and pay for it. Those aren't our realities anymore. When candidates are talking about eliminating debt, they're talking about transformational policies when they're talking about eliminating college debt. And so we have to be very intentional about what we're doing. My organization is extremely progressive. We have a legislation committee. We are actually pushing an initiative right now to support House Bill 4 and Senate Bill 45 to provide more gun regulations and background checks. Those shootings happened in two of the states that are chartered with my organization. I had calls with those state presidents. And also, when we even add in the Garlic Festival shooting in California, you know, we know that gun violence happens every single day, but these mass shootings are starting to become way too common, so we have to do something. And there's people in Congress who don't believe we need to do anything, and that's a problem. So it's up to us, in my opinion, to be the ones pushing that narrative, fighting for change, and that's exactly what we hope to do.
Fantastic. And with that, we're going to take a quick message break, and then we'll be back with Joshua Herritill. Be right back. All right, welcome back on Pride. I'm Jay Quinton, and we were talking with the president of the Young Democrats of America, Joshua Herritill. And Joshua, you begin to talk about gun violence, and obviously that's a very hot topic at any time, and it has been over the years. And, you know, after every mass shooting, it becomes a topic again. Some choose to ignore, some, you know, choose to blame, and others choose to try to write bills and get laws enacted. I know that, unfortunately, you had a family tragedy back in 2013 that kind of, I would guess, propelled kind of where, how you think about guns and victims' rights. Is that something that you can share with our audience?
Yeah. First, I like to tell people the definition of a mass shooting is four or more people affected by gun violence in a single instance, right?
Yeah.
And so in 2013, there were eight people who were affected by gun violence. Four of them were killed. Four more were injured. Five of those were under the age of 18. And half of those injured, one was my sister, one with her mother. They were both taken away from us. And my two little brothers, their lives were changed forever. Chris actually still has a disability at this point in time. He walks on crutches, doesn't have full nerve feelings in his leg yet. And what that did for me is it showed me that when we become desensitized to the shootings because we see them on TV all the time, we do ourselves a disservice. And so having that affect my family really put a lot into perspective for me. And so I'm not desensitized to it at all anymore. I feel every single one of those. I think about the families involved. I think about the futures that are hurt or impacted. I think about the communities that are devastated by this kind of action. And it drives me, you know. And when I think about victims' rights, like you were saying, I worked on Marcy's Law, State Question 794. It's about putting victims' rights in the Constitution. When I worked on that law, I was thinking about my two little brothers and a guy who was trying to do everything in his power to get out of jail, to not take responsibility for the actions that he caused. There was no doubt that he did it. But he tried to claim insanity so that he could get away with it, right? In hopes to break out of jail, in hopes to file appeals, in hopes to one day regain his freedom. But my brother's lives are never going to change, like never be the same again. Their mom is gone. My sister is gone. My 3-year-old nephew witnessed the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so it's not just about the lives that are lost. And I think when we think about mass shootings, we think about the lives that are lost, right? When we talk about the Dayton shooting, there's 9 people killed, 26, I believe, were injured. So we talk about that number, but we don't talk about the hundreds upon hundreds of people in that area now, the thousands of people in that live in that area, the millions of people that live in Ohio who are traumatized. We saw the motorcycle backfiring in New York City. I don't know if you saw this motorcycle backfire and it let off these huge bangs and people took off running. We are traumatized as a country because of the prevalence of all of this gun violence. And we aren't taking real steps to create change. And so that's why I had to be involved then. I have to be involved now, and that's why I'll always be involved in the future.
Yeah, and to your credit, and I know there was lots of people that worked on it, but I know that you were a face that was out there in the public talking about State Question 794 in Oklahoma. And if I have this right, it did pass and was approved in November of 2018 with 78% of the votes for yes. So
we got almost 80%, and there was 4 other state questions at that time. All of them failed. We were the only one to pass, and we did so by large margins. And that's because, you know, we went everywhere, we talked to everyone, and we shared our stories. I wasn't the only person affected by gun violence. We had a lot of survivors and family members come forward and share their stories and talk about how it's not just about the life that's lost, it's about the lives that are affected by that life being lost, and some of these people still being able to walk around afterwards. And so it was a huge coalition and an amazing effort to get that question passed.
And something I never thought about until I really looked into you and this particular law, but just the notification of, you know, court proceedings, something that you think happens for victims and victims' families, but it doesn't always. And that's what this, that's one of the things that this kind of law can do, right? Is add those rights to victims to know, you know, when there's court proceedings at a minimum.
Yeah, with our family, the shooting happened in the summer of 2013. The first contact that we really got about court proceedings came in the late fall, winter, early winter of 2016. The case was held in 2017. And so, like, that's a huge gap. And families have to try to continue to live on in that gap. And so not being involved in different things that were going on. There was one family that stayed in the general area. And so they were always calling up there. And so they were always getting more information than we had. We were trying to, my sister took over the caretaking for my little brothers. And was trying to, you know, relive life or find a sense of normalcy.
Right.
You know, and so she wasn't involved in all of that information. And so when the cops finally called, I went down and met them in Houston and had this conversation as they started to prepare them for court. But it was such a huge gap. And it was so much time wasted. And there were so many resources we didn't know about in terms of, like, therapy and financial resources and information resources. And it's like, if you are well-to-do and you have a good lawyer who knows the system, you're going to receive all of those benefits. If you're by yourself, then more often than not, you're not going to receive those benefits or even know they exist. And so that is disproportionate in terms of the way we provide justice to people. And it was something that I believe needed to change. And I was glad to be a part of that movement.
Hey guys, I just wanted to pause this part of the show for just a moment. I think it's important that we think about a couple of things and let some of this sink in. It's obvious that gun control, gun violence, anything to do with guns is a hot topic. It's very emotional, and people have very specific views on what we should do about it. I don't want us to get caught up in our current position on guns and control. I think that we should all come together and meet and have a real discussion about how we move forward in America, how we are that change to limit the number of mass shootings in our country. Every year, we're reminded of them. And, you know, there's some that are more polarizing than others, but I want us to take the time to really think about this. And to put it in perspective, you know, Josh is touching on something that was very personal to him, and clearly it would stoke a fire within you if you were a family member of a victim to gun violence or to a mass shooting. So I want us to remember that, and I want this part to sink in, that in August of 2013 at about 10:30 p.m. a gunman walked into a Dallas area home and shot and murdered a 43-year-old mother. He then turned that same gun on her 17-year-old daughter. The gunman then turned around and shot her 14-year-old son and 17-year-old family friend that was just visiting at the time. So he effectively killed two women and injured two young boys. And that wasn't enough for him. He got in his car and drove a few miles away to the house where Joshua's family lived. And in that house, he threw an explosive into the house and then opened fire on Joshua's family. The gunman murdered another mother and her 28-year-old daughter, Josh's sister. He also critically injured an 11-year-old boy and a 13-year-old boy, Josh's little brothers. And as you'll hear or have heard Josh talk about, his 3-year-old nephew witnessed it all. That's traumatic. It's emotional. I want that to sink in. If that is your family, if those are your family members, you're going to have an emotional reaction about it. And then it's what you do with that. And that's natural. And then it's what you do with that. Are you, as Josh says, are you part of the change? Or are you waiting for somebody else to be that change? Are you going to allow others to be murdered in this way? Are you going to allow others to be victims of mass shootings? Are you going to allow others to not have the rights as victims and victims' families as they should? So I think Josh is brave for being open about how he feels about this topic. And I've never heard Josh say, take all the guns away. In fact, I've heard him, you know, say that guns are part of being American. And it's about common sense laws. And so I think that if we respect each other and we listen to each other, we can sit down and have a conversation. We can agree, we can disagree, but we can sit down and have the conversation. So thank you for letting me pause for a moment. I'll get us back now to my conversation with Joshua right after we take this break. Thank you. And Joshua, so now that you are president of the YDA, and we talked a little bit about the priorities, but I guess immediately, I know your calendar is full, but what's next in general for, you know, we're coming up on 2020 soon here. Is there anything major that the YDA has going on that you're preparing for?
So one of... two things, right? Like I said, we have the push that we're going to be doing for these pieces of legislation to get gun background checks and close the loopholes and just have better common sense gun regulations. But in Oklahoma, earlier this year, we passed what is called permitless carry, right? So all you had to do before is get training and register with the state. We threw that out. Now you can carry a gun without any registration, without any training, willy-nilly. Tomorrow, we will be having a press conference and pushing for a veto referendum to kind of get that law thrown out. And so it's a very short window. We have to figure out how to get 75,000 signatures in 10 days, but it's something that we're really passionate about. It's something that we built a huge coalition who's going to support us on this. And we're hoping to make Oklahoma not be a permitless carry state anymore. And so it's something that I'm working on personally here in my state, but it's something that the organization as a whole backs me on in terms of philosophy. And so every opportunity we get to push for something, we're going to do just that.
All right. So in Oklahoma, and I don't, you know, by the time this airs, I don't know if there'll be any days left, but let's, maybe there will be. Where can they go if they support throwing this law out that allows you to carry without any kind of regulation, basically, or if they agree with that and want to sign, where can they sign this petition at?
This will be state question 803. And so look for us on Facebook, online. There'll be all kinds of resources available to you. But you type in state question 803, information will come up. My contact information will probably come up. I'm one of the leads on this. And you just let me know where you're at in the state, and I'll point you in the right direction. We're going to have different pickup locations and petition locations all across the state. It's a huge, huge effort. And so we're hoping to do some really, really big things and in a very short period of time. And then we're going to start the battle of getting people to vote yes on this state question and have permitless carry thrown out.
Got it. All right. So where else can they find you or the YDA? Do you have, is there an at me for Joshua or the YDA?
J Harris Till on Instagram, J Harris Till on Twitter, Joshua Harris Till on Facebook, YDA.org, at Young Dems on Twitter, you know, at Young Dems on Facebook. We're everywhere. You type in Young Democrats in the Google search bar, you're going to find me. You're going to find the organization. Get involved. We're going to point you to your state. Get involved with your state. Young Democrats of Oklahoma, Young Democrats of Texas, Young Democrats of California, wherever you're at, there's probably a Young Democrats near you. And if there's not, reach out to us and we'll point you in the right direction.
Perfect. And whether they, I'm going to assume whether they agree or disagree or want to help or want to loan suggestions, I'm sure you guys are open to all of that kind of communication, aren't you?
Yeah, I tell people all the time, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I just care that you're involved in the process. Young people have to be involved in the process because this affects us more. Right. You know, a lot of these long-term decisions are going to be the decisions that affect us. They're going to be the decisions that affect our children. So if we don't have a seat at the table, if we're not offering our perspective, then we're missing out. We're letting people make decisions for us. So regardless of how you align, if you got questions, you want to get involved, you want to be a part, let us know. We're willing to help.
Perfect. And with that, I'm going to thank you for your time. This was a pleasure to have you on the show. And I hope that we can touch base down the road here, talk about 803 maybe, and the result of that. It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jay, I really appreciate you having me. It's amazing the work that you're doing on this show, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll be back right after this. What a great conversation we had there with Joshua Harris Till, the president of the Young Democrats of America. An amazing guy that's been through a lot and has done what he said he was going to do, which is be the change. And that's inspiring, I think, regardless of what side of the aisle you find yourself or what group or label you want to throw on it. I think at the end of the day, if you are trying to make things better, if you're trying to change what is not right, that you have to be the change. You can't wait for somebody else to do it. You've got to do it. And he exemplifies that and has. And he's done it through politics and where he's at now. And we're excited to see what he does next. And like I said, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, I think it's a great message. And hopefully we were all a little inspired today by Mr. Harris Till. And thank you for joining us. You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts or where you're listening right now. You can find us again for the next episode. So look out for that. You can also find us on Facebook at Power and Pride Podcast. You can send us a message there. You can send us a voicemail. I'd love to hear from you, and we may even read your email or your message on the air. Or if you find a way to leave us a voicemail, we may even play your voicemail. So think about that. Again, thank you. This was Power and Pride. I'm your host, Jay Quinton. Oh, yeah. And then there's this.
Hey, this is Corey Booker heading out to Oklahoma. Very excited about this visit. And we share a lot of common cause and common sense just to make sure that people do need permits. People do need, we need to have common sense things that keep us safe and keep us strong in our communities. And we know the urgency. We know the challenges. Unfortunately, we know the levels of death in communities like ours. So we're in this together. It's about protecting our nation. It's about keeping us free from violence, free from fear, to be strong and to be who we should be, which is a nation of justice for all. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
All right.
Until next time.